Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Morning. Welcome back to the show. You beat me to it.
Yeah.
I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah, but I know. I was trying to surprise you.
Yeah, well, you did.
Yes.
I'm like, who is that in my earphone? Good morning, everybody. Today's Friday, November 15th, and it's finally the weekend. I'm really happy. Do we have a sound on there? You probably want to turn it down, no?
I don't have sound.
Just the sound, no?
There's no sound on.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Now we don't hear
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Thank you. We do have a guest in the studio, and we're going to bring him on in just a moment. If you guys want to check us on Facebook, Facebook Live, you can go to our page, LA Talk Radio, and see us there. Here, Jen is waving to you and everything. So we're all good. Is Friday a good day for you? Do you like Fridays?
Yeah, I like Fridays.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, I don't work a 9-to-5, so
right.
I mean, all the days of the week are sort of the same to me.
Right, but you have a weekend coming, right?
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
For me, Friday is good because I work only till 12, and then I find nothing to do, of course. So I just get
no
bored
Vegas
the whole
this weekend.
Day. No Vegas again this weekend. So we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen, but at least some rest is better than nothing, you know?
Oh, yeah. You need that self-care.
I do. I do. Even if it's boring, but I'll have to find something to do. I know it's the same every week, but eventually I'll find something, you know? I've been wanting to go camping, and the interesting thing is when I finally was ready to go with a meetup group, that week I got my stroke on Tuesday.
Ugh.
So it never materialized.
You're like, sorry,
and now
guys,
everything is cold, you know, it's too cold to sleep outside.
Too cold,
don't you think, at night?
No, I think that's the best time.
Really?
Is when it's nice and chilly at night, hot during the day,
like 50 degrees in the tent.
I mean, it's 10 degrees back east right now, and
that's true, but we're talking camping.
Yeah. I'm down to 50 degrees. 50 degrees sounds perfect to me.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll try it out and see what it's like,
just
you know.
Bring layers.
Yeah, but they don't have, obviously, they don't have camping right now, or overnight at least, because they probably feel it's cold too.
Oh, man.
But I'll do my own, I guess.
You a know, bunch of weenies just, out here.
I know. I'm telling you, we're very spoiled. We have like about probably a month window where I can go because it's either too hot or too cold here, you know.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
Go figure, you know.
Does it get colder than this at night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll get in the winter, it'll get to like in the 30s sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
usually
impressive.
40s, 50s.
Is everyone just totally losing their shit when that happens?
Well, you'll see. No, really, we still don't get to wear real winter clothes. You
oh,
know?
My gosh.
That's the one thing I like about the East Coast. You can have a lot of fashion because you can put layers of clothes and everything. Here, it's always a t-shirt and jeans because it's never cold enough.
Here's
you know?
The truth about that. It seems like fashion, but it's not actually fashion. It's just desperation for warmth.
Yeah, but you can show off clothes.
I know, it's true.
Jackets and coats.
So many jackets living in New York. I know. I was actually out last night and I was really cold when I left, and we were walking to the car and I was like shivering a little bit. I was like, when I go home in a few weeks, I'm definitely bringing some of my jackets back with me. I have so many of them. So many. Oh my gosh.
Wow. So you have about a week before you go, right? I mean, you're going like
soon.
For Thanksgiving.
I'm going Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, so you're flying in that day, which is good because they're saying on Wednesday it's going to be the busiest day.
I know, yeah.
You're flying in on Thursday.
I get in at after Thanksgiving, basically midnight on Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
why are you going to miss it?
I know. I really wanted to go home, and I'm like, it's okay if I miss dinner, I guess. It's the only thing that fit in my sky miles.
Yeah. Oh, well, you got to go with that.
Totally. So,
oh, well.
You know, even flying just the day before would have been an extra like $300 on top of my sky miles. But just going then, it was like 20,000 sky miles instead of 75,000 sky miles.
Yeah,
it's that big of a jump, which is kind of crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you'll
maybe
get
next
there.
Year.
Yeah.
Like, save me leftovers. So I'll eat them at midnight.
Yeah.
Pass right
it's
out.
It's still something to look forward to. I mean, you go to your family and everything. First time you see them in, what, a few months, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
My cats
are
there.
Oh, poor baby, 2 months you didn't see your family.
I know. It's hard, though. I'm used to living in New York. I could go home once a month and hang out, and I had my cats with me. I miss them so much. They're at my mom's house. And
right.
Can't wait to scoop them up and give them a good squish.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk to you about missing family. I mean, when I came here at 16, I was here for how long? About a year before my dad came to visit me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't seeing my family that often at all until they moved here 5 years later to be with me. So, you know, and at 16, you miss your family a lot.
I mean, I'm 31. I miss my family so much.
So I've learned to be self-sufficient. So that's a good thing.
You have to be.
It made me independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, well, enough bullshit for this morning. We're going to continue now with more serious talk. We do have a guest coming in or came in already, and we're joined by Kim Magnuson. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Welcome.
Get closer to the mic.
Thank you very much.
Of course. And you're visiting us from Denmark?
That's correct.
I understand.
And I'm actually leaving today, going back to where it's very cold compared to
here
and New York.
So, oh, so you're leaving today?
I'm leaving in right after this.
Wow, so we're going to have to make this exciting for you so you have a good taste in your mouth when you leave, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's a tall order, man.
Oh, wow.
A lot of pressure.
Ooh, I'm just gonna leave now.
If we can entertain you for an hour, that'll be good.
No, yeah. I'm already entertained.
So. Yeah. Oh, good, good.
Thank you. So how long have you been here this time when you visited?
Just a short week, 6 days.
6 days.
Yeah.
And you came here to do what? To promote your film?
Different things. There was a film market called American Film Market that I attended. It's a couple of days of meetings with a lot of people.
Isn't that where you went?
Yeah, I was there this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So
you went there to do what? Now, this is where you pitch your movie?
Yes, where you have, you go and pitch projects and you talk to sales agents and buyers and things like that to get a, you know, idea of if your project is something good. And
right.
You're talking about people having projects for you to look at because I'm a producer. So, of course, I'm always looking for new talent and new projects to get involved in. So you sit there and you have meetings and coffee and lunches and whatever it is to find each other. And sometimes, you know, it takes years and sometimes some of them just pops up and it becomes something good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about the networking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So were you able to meet some,
some
relevant people, let's say?
I had some good meetings, but, you know, it's also because I'm not like, in, you know, it's very much a sales market. So it's really like, you know, films that are being sold by sales agents to studios and to buyers and to distributors around the world. But then a part of that, there's a whole production and producing networking where we find, you know, you find each other. And some of them you meet is also from, you know, not even from America, but, you know, from Finland and Germany and all that. But everybody comes in at the
same time. Everyone comes here to do it.
So it's kind of instead of traveling around Europe and all that, then you go one place and everybody's there. And, you know, it goes the same at Cannes and Berlin. And there's kind of these events during the calendar year in our business that kind of you have to go to.
Yeah. Very interesting. So, have you been here before and in Hollywood?
I lived here for many years.
Oh, wow.
Was this your first AFM?
No, I've been there the last probably 20 years.
Nice. Well,
when did you live here?
I went to school here in 91, so there I lived here for 3 years, and then since then I had a couple of winters where I escaped the cold and went to L.A. because I have to say that the winters in L.A. is very nice, and I like to be in a t-shirt and having, you know, 75 degrees in the day and 55 in the evenings because I do like that it gets chilly at night. It cleans out the air,
so
I do like the L.A. weather during the winter.
Right, and you live in Denmark where it's pretty cold.
Yeah, I mean, those 3 years where we were here, my wife and our new kids, it was the three coldest winters in Denmark for the last, 20 years going back.
Wow.
So we were very lucky to be here.
How cold is cold over there?
Cold there. We had 5.5 months of snow and ice, and it was, you know, so that's Celsius. So that was probably like minus 15 Celsius, so that's about minus 40 Fahrenheit, I think.
Wow.
30 Fahrenheit. I can't remember how. I can only do the when it's on the plus side of the Fahrenheit, how to calculate.
You guys go by Celsius and everything.
Yes, so we go by Celsius.
But it sounds cold enough to me. I mean, it's below zero, below freezing. Yeah. Wow, 5-6 months of ice
and
snow?
That was like extraordinary. It's never happened before. I mean,
what is it usually, like 3 months? 4 months?
If we're lucky, in the old days it was like that. If we're lucky these days, we get maybe 3-4 weeks where it kind of gets white and snowy and icy, and you can enjoy winter, you know, wonderland,
right,
and go ice skating on the lakes and things like that. But because of climate change and the weather and everything, lately we are becoming this very gray and drizzling rain.
Really?
And gray sky. You don't sometimes you don't see the sun for maybe, you know, 10, 12, 14 days, and just see drizzling gray.
It's and so not like that.
And then it's
here.
Like 35 degrees Fahrenheit or 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and just that drizzling gray is just, that I can't bear.
Right. You know, that's unbearable. Depressing for you.
That's so depressing.
Yeah, I was saying yesterday, New York does that. Yeah, it'll rain for like 2-3 weeks straight every single day. Yeah. Just rain.
And the rain is the worst. I mean, it's like, because it's like so, when it's just like, I love rain when it comes down hard and you know it's rain, and
nice
then you know that in a couple of hours it'll be over or whatever it is. But it's like that small drizzling, it's just like, oh my God.
And it's all,
you know,
the
because
time,
it's like, it's just depressing all the time.
Yeah, you just want to tell the clouds to let it loose already.
And the sun gets up, you know, the sun gets up in the wintertime at what, 9:50 a.m. and goes down at 2:40 p.m. So days are very short.
That's in the winter,
so
right?
Yeah, it's a
and
winter.
Then in the summer, you have very long
opposite.
Days.
It's the opposite. So sometimes in the summer, you know, it rises. I mean, right there in June, you know, when it's the longest day of the year, it probably rises like, what, 2:50 a.m. and goes down at 11 p.m.
Right.
So basically, if you're by the water, which Denmark has a lot of water everywhere, small islands, you know, you would basically never feel that it's dark.
Yeah, right? In the summer, yeah.
How about that?
I know. Because I, by the way, love Denmark. I've been there twice when I was very young, though. So, and I remember going there, we were there in the summer, and the weather was amazing, you know, I mean, it was sunny and everything, but I remember the day ended at about 9, 10 o'clock, there was still light outside, you know, and I thought how neat that is, you know, but then to live with that every day,
exactly,
it's kind of weird, right?
Confusing.
And that's why people are out, I mean, and that's also, I mean, I love LA, as I've called it my second home, and but I do love that here, you kind of, all year long, you almost have the same light hours. Of course, in the summer, it's a couple of hours more, but you still have evening here. You still have an evening where things cools down. You can, just about what you talk about, if you have to dress up a little and have a shirt, you know, a jacket on or a sweater or something, you can do that at night. Even in the summertime, you can go out, you can go to the movies without feeling that you abandon the sun.
Right.
So in Denmark, everybody's like out in the sun all the time because they know that it's going to be dark soon.
Oh,
so they need all that. So like the movies in Denmark, I mean, the movie theaters in Denmark, you can't play any local film. You can only play the big American films during the summer because people don't go to the movies because, you know, only young people does because they want to go anyway, you know, for dating and whatever they do. But, you know, so that's always like that. Everybody's just absorbing that sun and light before.
And not only that, but what I do remember, I don't know how it is now, but Denmark, at least in the 70s, was pretty, like, sexually liberal. So You'd have women lying topless in the parks, and nobody did any. I mean, nobody said anything.
Not in America.
Like very, very natural. Do they still do that in the summer?
So now I have to say yes, they do. So we get everybody traveling.
Everybody coming there, right?
I'll be the biggest tourist person now.
I know.
No, but I mean, of course, you know, we kind of. I think we did the sexual revolution in the 68 and all that with the whole freedom and all that. So it was at those times, but now it's not like that.
Not like that anymore.
You will find places, and I mean, I think also over here, things are going more natural than it has maybe been in the last 20 years or something.
Sure.
Right.
So you will find people, but not in parks and all that anymore.
Right.
Maybe a little, actually. That's not true, but it's not like the 70s.
Right.
Definitely not. Yeah. And you will be on the beaches, people do it, but you know, people are still covering themselves up. Not just because they're bears, it's just, I think, feeling
right
more, you know, themselves.
Maybe it was just back then to make a statement, you know.
Maybe.
But listen, it was the late 60s. I mean, it was the same here. You had Woodstock, you had everything in America as well. We were just the foreground of it, you know. It started in Denmark, We freed porn in 68, and then it, right. you know, that was what
that's
we
the
got
thing,
known
you know,
for.
You yeah. went for porn and everything, and there was like so much, yeah. many stores everywhere. And yeah. I was like 15 years old.
Yeah.
We went with friends and stuff. I mean, with a family, but friends my age too. And we had a blast, you know. And I mean, yeah. coming from Israel, we saw all those blonde girls, blue eyes, and mm-hmm. it was like
very
we
different.
Went crazy, you know.
Yes.
So I
we
can went imagine. To like, I can imagine.
So in like Copenhagen, we went to like they have Tivoli Garden there, yeah. right, which is a big like park, like
yeah. amusement park.
Amusement park, and I mean, we could have beer at 15, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a different time.
I'm
man.
Gonna party.
Listen here, it's still like that. You can buy alcohol. At 16,
uh-huh.
but you can't buy cigarettes before you're 18.
Right.
Oh wow.
Back then
yeah.
we were Denmark. Even smoking cigarettes at 15. You know.
And here on the West Coast and most of the country, you can get like beer or wine even at you know Rite Aid. Back East, you can't.
Really?
Yeah. There's no alcohol in grocery stores or anything like that, which
oh,
is really
wow.
crazy.
Yeah.
But it's also because Denmark, out of the Nordic region, has also been a very liberal country. If you
right.
go to Sweden, yeah. just you know, right across. There, you can't buy. You can only buy alcohol out of state-owned stores.
I see. So it's more conservative
I mean,
in Sweden.
Yeah,
they're more
in
Sweden. They're more conservative. This you're saying?
No, or? I mean, I think political-wise, you're kind of the same at the moment. It goes up and down. Sometimes you're right-wing. Sometimes you're liberal. Sometimes you're Democrats. You know, things like that.
Right
now in Denmark, we have a democratic government, but. I'm saying on some of those things with I think actually it comes from because of Sweden they're even north of us so
yeah,
there it
yeah.
really gets dark
right
and all that so I know from the old days a lot of people because it was like dark for 4 months in the northern part of the Nordic would just drink themselves to death. So I think it was one of the reasons. I don't know if this is right or if it's just an urban legend, but I think it was one of the reasons why they state controlled the sale of alcohol.
Oh, I see.
Wow. Americans are so squeamish about sexuality and all that other stuff. You know, people take a boob out for breastfeeding here and everyone
exactly.
freaks out.
Yeah,
it's all over the internet.
Exactly. I mean, and in Denmark, you would see people doing it all way public. It is allowed public
yeah.
and you would have people putting their, you know, walk with their kids in a stroller and put it outside a store and they would go shopping.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
Here you get arrested.
Yeah.
There was a Danish girl that got arrested in New York for doing it. Because she
leaving
just
the kid
know.
Outside?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You would
sit
I can't in, even imagine.
You know, but that's what we do in Denmark. There would be, you would have strollers like in front of a store and the moms would go in.
Wow.
Yeah, but here someone would take the kid and
exactly.
do
that's
whatever.
What I'm saying. So this Danish yeah. woman in New York, it was some years back, maybe 10 years back or something. I mean, she was literally sitting by the window so she could actually know but
right.
she got arrested for doing it.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty dangerous here, but it's there's a lot less crime out there, right, in Denmark and
yeah.
in Scandinavia in general, right?
I think actually if you go into the percentage of population and all that, I think we're as bad as some people will say America is, you know
right.
what I mean? I just
yeah.
think because I mean, I wake up for these news things when I've been here this year. I mean, just this one morning, two women killed overnight in two parts of our main, you know, mainland.
Mm.
I mean, that's, you know, out of a population of 5 million. But, you know, so I think we do have the crime. We do have things like that. But, of course, you feel much safer there,
yeah.
like you might do in some bigger cities in America. But I mean, I have come in and out of LA for so many years. I went to school here in the 90s, and I remember, you know, seeing the front of New York, I mean, LA Times at the time where I went to school. I went to school at AFI, American Film Institute.
Oh, wow.
Which is
very nice.
Western and Franklin in Hollywood.
Right.
And there was like this front page, I think I still have it at home somewhere, where it kind of showed the map going down on Western and then having like 23 gangs, really, you know, gangs
really?
In that area from like Franklin. And going down to maybe Santa Monica Boulevard or something.
Wow.
I mean,
oh
it was like,
gosh.
And those things you don't see anymore in LA.
Right,
I mean, I actually
right.
heard something a couple of years back that LA was actually, and New York was actually now so safe compared to being such a big city.
Yeah.
You know, so
probably,
something
yeah.
has happened
yeah.
here. But then
yeah.
you see all the stupid school shooting, and we had it yesterday right here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous and it's scary. And, you know, of course it all depends, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you have
times
to, you have to get
yeah.
rid of the. You have to have
for
that
sure
gun
are.
Control going, and I know it's the biggest issue in America. But you know, you just that's the only way forward. You know, you need to control it.
Yeah.
Oh well, not into politics.
No,
today.
Not into politics.
We're
going to
talk about your movies. So tell us. So you're a filmmaker. Well. You made a short film.
Yes,
and,
I made a couple.
Yeah, you made several, right?
Yes.
So you came here to study film in the 90s. Did you make any student films back there? You have
yeah,
to.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, of course. I mean, I came basically after I had produced two features in Denmark, and I kind of, you know, I was growing up in the business. My father's a producer, so working, you know, directly into the business after school and all that, and I did stuff. And then I came here. I kind of wanted to have, you know, an education on also of what I had been doing, but also get kind of a piece of paper on it. Right. So I went to FI and was here. And of course, during a course on FI, during the 2 years you're there, you do 3-4 narrative shorts, you know, as part of your, you know, doing it during that. And you do, you know, your thesis project and all that. So those I did, of course. And then I was working here for a year. When you're from a foreign country, you get what is called a practical training when you're doing a master's here. So, and then I could work for 1 year here, which I worked on some two big American movies. And then I went home to Denmark and formed a production company with my dad. And then since then, we've done a tons of amount of shorts, but also a tons of amount of feature films. And I also ran a big studio in the Scandinavian area called Nordisk Film for 6 years. And then, so I'm a producer by heart and produce everything I can get my hands on that I like the and have my taste into.
Yeah. Fantastic. So you came from a home where there was film and everything. Your father was a producer?
Yes.
I see.
I grew up with, you know, producing. Tried to get out of it. Oh, but
just roped you in.
It just got dragged back in. Yeah. So there was nothing really I could do about it.
Yeah. Oh,
and
well.
then I liked it,
that's,
you know.
That's not something bad to get into.
No. I produced my first feature when I was 23 years old. And then it was after that, it was kind of saying, okay, I can't hold it back anymore. And then I just kept on going.
You get the taste for it.
Yeah.
That's 31 years ago now. Oh, my God. I'm getting old.
Oh, well. But aren't we all, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but we're getting wiser. What the hell? You know, that's what you want to believe. Yeah,
totally.
That's what we want to believe. But getting old sucks, man.
I know. All my friends in their 20s are like, "What's it like being over 30?" And I'm like, yeah. "I'm like, it's better." Honestly, I wouldn't go back to my 20s.
I mean, I don't feel like I'm 54. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, I feel young, and I still feel like I have many years to go.
Yeah,
definitely.
Very good.
You're only as old as you feel.
Exactly.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. But, well, that depends. I take some issue with that, but...
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, I'm pushing 60 next year.
And young children make you stay young, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my kids are grown, you know, but why? Do you have younger children?
I have 4 kids, 25, 23, and then 9 and 7. So
wow.
I have young kids.
Wow, what a spread.
So you remarried or something?
Yes,
I did. I see, okay. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, so you still have young kids. I can see how that would keep you young and everything.
Any of them interested in film?
What?
Any of them interested in film?
Yes. My oldest daughter is becoming a producer as well. So.
Amazing. Really? I love that.
And my oldest son was you know, flirting with it for 2 years doing commercials, but now he's in the restaurant business. So, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Good kids.
Very interesting.
And the small ones?
Who knows?
We're trying to keep them away, but, you know... They do like to.
It's
to,
such a hard but fulfilling business.
To see
business.
Them talk about it and all that, and of course, you know, my wife have worked with television for many years, and also in the entertainment. So it's like, it comes into the family.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Now you're a producer. Have you played different roles like a director as well?
No,
too?
Always.
So you're with the putting it together kind of thing, right? Tell us some of the responsibilities that a producer has.
I mean, a producer is kind of a, you know, the spider in a web, in a way. It is kind of what people, you can maybe say, if you kind of put some you know, some things on it, because you have all those arms out there that you have to control, and that you have to keep, that they have to come together.
Right.
So when you're, you know, so basically a producer is the overall boss of the film in one way or the other. Especially in America, the producer is the bigger responsibility than in Europe. In Europe, is very a little more, you know, driven towards the artistic side, so the director and the vision of the director and so on. Uh-huh. Which of course is also here when you put film together. I mean, the director is of course who the person that you're trying to help to get to where that person wants to tell the story.
Right.
But you are the one who are kind of navigating, you know, getting the money, if it's from a studio or from different tons of different buyers around the world, or small investors or whatever. You're the one in charge of that, good, get things done on time and all that. So the producer is kind of the overall person that needs to have a finger into everything.
Right. It's like the business side more than the creative side. But do you get involved in the creative part?
Yeah, very much. I mean, I feel like when I'm involving myself in producing a film, I want to be involved. I mean, of course, when I ran the studio in Denmark, it was something else, because then you're corporate and then you have people underneath you that you kind of believe in, and then what they come with their taste, that's what you have to believe in.
Right.
But as a producer, and it's what I've been doing most of my life, you know, hands-on producing, I involve myself creatively, you know, read a script, come with notes. And then, of course, depends on who the director is. If, you know, if that's a very strong director that have a very clear creative vision and things like that, you give more space. Is it a younger director that you might have to navigate and help a little, then you put your efforts into that. And then I put myself very much on set, very much involved in the shooting and, you know, making sure that things run smoothly, because that's where you can also see the director's vision if it comes to live, or if, you know, if there's something going on and actors will come to you and say, oh, I don't like this, you know, you have to help me on this, you know. So you kind of need to see what is actually being going on. That kind of producer I am. There's a lot of money producers who's just out there that get their names on because they came in with money or something like that, and or business side of the producing, which just, you know, makes the deal and then go on to the next deal. So there are different kind of producers. I try to tend to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially in the editing, you know, after we shoot and all that, that's where I try to be creative again and come with my thoughts on the cuts and things like that.
Yeah.
Producing's a lot of work. I produced a couple of films myself, and it was a lot, especially my first go. I was kind of like, oh, like the producer's always that person that's running around on set on the phone, making all the phone calls. Like whenever you see that person, that's the producer.
Yeah. You got to make sure that everything works.
Yeah. You know, because it's a machinery that runs, you know, it's like an army.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every morning at 6, it starts. You have 30 days to, you know, when you see these huge movies, some of them are shot in 30 days. You know, of course, big Marvel movies and all that is 120 or 150 or whatever, because they maybe do 6 seconds a day, because it's all about the VFX. But a normal movie, you know, around the world has come down to, you know, as little as 25 days for a feature film. I think, you know, Joy, we were just
insane.
I was just talking to some friends. I had a meeting prior to coming here this morning, and we talked about it, because we're talking about a project that we wanted to try to get going. And we talked about, you know, the schedule on that was like 28 days. And we said, well, maybe it's a little, but like Joy, you know, a big, you know, movie with Robert De Niro, Jennifer Lawrence and all those, it was shot in 26 days.
Really? Wow.
I mean, and it's like,
and it's a lot of acting, a lot of drama.
And you're hustling,
And it is so strange, because you're fighting and fighting and fighting for years. You're getting all that money, and then in the end, you only have 26 days to shoot. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the old days, it was 40 and 50, at least in Denmark. That was like an average, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. Now we're down to 5-6 weeks if we're lucky for a huge movie. And I feel creatively just ruins the films.
Really?
And, you know, but it's because every day is such cost,
right,
you know, to get going.
It's true. So it's just like a machine, like a,
totally,
right?
So you have to, that's what I'm saying. So coming to what Gemma was just saying, you have to have that machinery running. You can't wait and say, oh, what is not happening?
Right.
Everything has to be in place. All the wheels have to go out at the same time, and, you know, totally organized.
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot
it's
of
so
work.
So true, yeah.
Yeah.
Producing's a lot.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
So, you've been, I mean, you're a multiple winner of some awards, right? I mean, that's what Catherine was saying and everything. What was the first film you actually got recognized in a big way that you made? Was that a short film also?
I mean, yeah. I mean, definitely if we're sitting here in Los Angeles and talking about Los Angeles, then, of course, the Oscars is, of course, kind of the where everybody, at least my feeling for the film industry, is where, you know, where you want to aim for. You know, that's the biggest recognition you can get, because it's done by your peers, it's done by the industry, it's not people, you know, out there, it's industry people, that so it's your own working self that are voting on each other. So that, for me, is the true recognition of your filmmaking skills.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, very early on in our in our films, in our company, we had, it was kind of another kind of, we were called the alternative film school back in Denmark because we had a lot of young people coming and working for us. And we did a lot of short films, both because there was a financial program at the time that helped doing them and you could actually make some money out of doing them, which is very, you know, strange because normally you don't make money of making short films. On the contrary, you pay money.
Yeah.
But we kind of did it because we had all these young filmmakers that we wanted to try to work with and to try them out before you put your money into a feature film. Because here, doing feature films, basically in Hollywood, you know, everybody's, the films are financed by somebody else's money. I mean, that's kind of the first rule in Hollywood, use other people's money.
Right.
But in Europe, it's not like that. There, the rule is you have to use your own money to get other money.
Really?
So you have to show that you believe in a project in order to get money and funding from the government and this, all these subsidiaries that are there. So in order to do that, you, of course, also as a producer need to know that the person that you are putting yourself into, your money into, that you can work with that person.
Right.
So a great way to find that out is, of course, to do a short film, because you can definitely see right away, do we have a connection? You know, us as filmmakers, if we want to work together, did we have a connection doing a short? Or is it not going to be something good? You know what I mean? I always say it's like a short film is like a date or a small relationship or something, you can break it off.
Right, and then exactly.
And then you can
you
stay,
don't have to commit yet.
Exactly,
to that
you can
person.
Stay friends for life, or you can become non-friends again, or whatever. If it was a bad, you know, relationship or date. But making a feature film is like, I would say it's like having a baby, because you make this together, and for life you will be connected over that feature film, because it has rights and it has, you know, during the life, it has you know, library money coming in, all that. You might get divorced, but you still have the baby together.
That's true.
So for me, that is how I look at it when doing these shorts. I'm saying, okay, here's a filmmaker. I think that person can do something that I would love to see.
Right.
And that's what we did. And then we have some young filmmakers. And then we got into the Oscars very early on. And we got nominated 3 years in a row back in the 90s. And eventually I won my first Oscar in 99 with one of these Danish filmmakers.
Congratulations
yeah,
on that.
That's fantastic. Congrats.
What was that film about?
It was called Election Night, and it was not a comedian, but with a funny twist on somebody who wanted to show that he was not racist, because you know, at that time it was the late 90s and a lot of coming in. So it was about, there was a vote going on in Denmark. So we had the election, the official election, I mean, in the film, of course.
Right.
So it was election day. So it was called Election Night, the film. And he comes to this bar and he goes and sits with his friends. And he's like so patriotic about, oh, we have to fight for everybody. Everybody has equal rights. Everybody needs to be, you know, liberated. We will include everybody, diversity. We love it. That was all the things he said. Actually, all the things going on right now and in this industry, it was about that already back then in 99.
Uh-huh.
And then they said, so the two friends, he was sitting in a bar, and then they were saying, did you vote today?
Yeah.
And he said, no. Oh, he said, and then the time was running out of the voting. And then he said, 2 to 4 in 10 minutes of him trying to get through town to the voting booths, and multiple taxis he's get into, they're all racist. You know, one in a redneck, one is a Nazi, one is all this. You know, you even have a Japanese who's a racist against the Koreans, you know, has opened this, you know. So it all goes along that way. And then and then there's a comedic twist in the end that sadly enough shows that we all have racism in us. And you can't say you're not racist one way or the other. Everybody has that. So it was the punchline to really get people
really
to think about it. And it was really a good, great short, and we eventually won on that.
Very nice.
Where can that be found?
Oh, we have it. So it's not online, I think. It might be online, because I think we let it shoot for a short Election Night Oscar film, and then it might be there.
Very
that sounds
nice.
Interesting.
Very
I
impressive.
Want to watch that.
And that was 1999?
That was 1999.
Oh, okay, cool. Right before the turn of the century.
Yes.
The Y2K.
So let's talk a little bit about your current film that's called The Confirmation.
Yeah.
And tell us what that's about.
Yeah. So just quickly, in between that and until we sit here now, we've had a great, I kept on doing this thing with young filmmakers, and we had a great run at the Academy, and We won in the company three more since 99.
Uh-huh.
And now we're sitting here talking about Confirmation, which is one of our latest films that we did last year, which is a coming-of-age film. Very sweet. Sweet is maybe the wrong word, but, you know, very confined little film that takes place in a one day's life of a young boy who used to be a girl. So it's a transgender story about a boy turning boy. And in there, we had the confirmation, which, of course, or bar mitzvah, if you can say so, now when I'm sitting with you coming from Israel. But, you know, where it's a Christian tradition where people get, you know, confirmed that they believe in God and those kind of things. And so it's in church. We start off, we see, you know, that the priest say the name of the of him when he was born, which when he was born female.
A girl, right.
So as a girl, so, you know, we hear the priest by accident saying the wrong name. And then the mother stands up for her son and talking about that's not the right name, and the priest has to call out the new name. And, you know, to set the setting. And then we are at the back home where you normally have a reception for your confirmation and a party at the house and all that. And then that's where a lot of these issues kind of get out in the open from people who are frustrated about how can he do it and what are the rules and why do you do it and those kind of things. So it's a very emotional story, a very personal emotional story,
right.
About being transgender and want to change over.
Right.
Then at the same time, it's also a mother-daughter son
relationship
of, right. Of course, their upbringing, but the mother really supports him and his doing,
right.
And also up against the guest at the party, you know, which has, you know, some of the younger guests are like, oh, you know, trying to, right. You know, make fun about it and all that.
What about the father?
The father's there, and of course, he also supports the son.
The son?
Yeah.
I love hearing about parents and relatives being supportive about that kind of thing.
So it's very, it's a very strong little piece. And then the amazing thing about it was then we had to cast it, you know, and that's, you know, and we were, of course, looking for the best actor, but we also wanted to see, we also wanted to be real.
Right.
I mean, how real could we make it? And then we actually went on, and we were so lucky that we found a boy who was going through this in real life, had been a girl, becoming a boy,
right.
At that age group.
What age?
He's 14 years old.
14.
So we are doing the whole. He was doing the whole transformation. It was part of it. He just finished now. I think he has his last thing to become, you know. And that was just amazing because it gives just the quality of, and he was a great actor, and the quality of that just makes it so much more real.
Right.
Because that's been genuine. Here in America, that's been all about, you know, how to cast. You know, if you're casting somebody in a wheelchair, do they actually, they should be disabled and actually be wheelchair? If they, you know, there's been all these things in the industry here. And we didn't do it because of that. We did it because it was the right choice and he was the right person. And, of course, he knew exactly what the character was going through.
Sure.
So I feel that you can see that on the screen.
Right.
I'm really, really happy about that.
So right. Let me ask, what kind of research do you do when writing a film like that?
It was, of course, director called Marie-Louise Damgaard, who's the director and writer of the film. And she, you know, it actually came along because it was her own story. She's not transgender, but she had a, you know, story about her confirmation and things like that. But, and then she wanted to do the setting, and she wanted, then she had friends and, you know, in transgender and gay and lesbian community. And she kind of, I think, felt that it was a great way, narrative way to tell story, because it is a, you know, a son-mother relationship story about accepting. You know, so it's about accepting each other. It's about accepting the differences. It's about be who you are and be.
Sure.
It's okay to be who you are, and the mother really supports that, and also the father. But of course, it's a short film. We go with the mother and him and the son. You know, that's kind of we concentrate on their relationship, and so in her research, I think she just felt like here was a narrative we could use to build, you know, those emotions around the story.
Sure.
So, and then of course you talk to people. We talk to a lot of LGBTQ plus community, the transgenders, and things like that to figure out what it really was. And that's also how we found him, the actor. It was through our research into transgenderness.
Right.
Amazing.
And how did you find out about the story, about the film? Did you meet the director beforehand and she pitched
you? I knew her a little already. And of course, I hate to talk about myself, but being the producer I am back in Denmark, and also especially having this run with the short films, getting them out in the world and all that, a lot of people who have something good for short films, they tend to call me and say, do you want to read this? So that's what she did. And I read it, or she pitched me the story because before she wrote it. And I said, this is great. Let's do it.
Really? And this is before she even wrote the story?
Yeah, because, you pitch it and you say, this is what I want to tell. And I said, of course, I said, let's do it in the way I say, let's have that, let's see that script. Let's try to find money for that script. And in the end, nobody wanted to support it from the official channels in Denmark. So I ended up paying it all myself.
Oh, wow.
But everybody worked for free, and that's how you can do it there. You can have people help you, and even the actors work for free. But then, of course, if it sells for television and all that, then they get their money later. But right. We made it for less than $7,000.
Really?
Wow.
And that's the point about short films. Usually it's sort of like to build a resume, right?
I mean,
you don't make it definitely. To make money.
Yeah.
Because it usually only plays in festivals and things like that.
No, you don't make it to make money. I mean, of course, if... knock on wood, this film, would go on to the Oscars or any other big festival and win. And then there could be some sales on that. And, for television station, and now the streamers are coming in, there are more and more short film. There are going to be more and more short film platforms coming out in the future. I've heard of this coming out called Argo that's coming in America in the future and things like that. That's just going to focus on short films.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, with our tablets and our iPhones, we can, just traveling or things like that. They look at things, and I think they got kind of the whole music videos, small 1-2 minute segments of a cat rolling a ball. And I think people kind of got past that situation now.
Right.
That's my own feeling. Maybe I'm totally wrong if somebody sits out there and says, no, we have all the research from YouTube. That's all they want to do. But in my mind, coming from a fictional world, of course, I feel like the short film format, you can still, 10, 15, 20 minutes, if you're commuting somewhere, you have time to see those.
Right.
So I think people are getting into that, and these streaming platforms that we already know of and new in the future will also have that. Right. Katzenberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg, a big, big prolific filmmaker out of, in the industry, one of the biggest.
Right.
He announced a couple of years back that he was going into the short format, and I think his content and his thing will go on next year. I mean, it's scheduled to start next year. We're all yet to see what's in there, but a lot of things is happening on his side as well. So there are things there. So there might be a future for these short films. But yes, right. You're totally right. You don't start out saying, I want to make money because they are making a short film.
Right.
Just like I said before, you're having the dating with a short film to see if you're eventually going to
exactly
end up being married,
let people know what you can do.
Exactly.
Let them see. And then how long is confirmation? How long is the film?
It's 18 minutes.
18 minutes. So that's about just around the top length of what short films are made, right?
I mean,
some are made longer, but it's unusual.
I mean, officially at many festivals is either 30 or 40 minutes, which is the maximum length.
Oh, really? So they'll go up to 40 minutes?
Yeah, the Academy is, Academy is up to 40 minutes. I personally think that's way too long.
Right.
Most festivals around the world do it at 30 minutes, half an hour. I personally, again, think that's just the longest. I mean, we were nominated a couple of years back for a movie called Silent Nights, and that was just 30 minutes.
Yeah.
That was a very powerful film, and that was okay that it was 30 minutes. But otherwise, I'll say the sweet spot for, in my taste, of a short film is somewhere between 17 and 22 minutes.
Gotcha. Okay, so that was perfect for you as far as the length. And how about this year? Are you being considered?
I mean, the Oscars? The confirmation is in there to you know, for the reviewing process with the Academy members. I mean, with the Academy, like 200 other films or whatever it is.
How many? A couple hundred they have to go through?
I think so. I mean, I don't think the number has been announced, but I saw yesterday or 2 days ago that they announced that it was 159 feature length documentaries.
Whoa.
And normally there are more short films than documentaries, so yeah, maybe this is somewhere up there, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Very nice.
That's and that awesome.
And then that's a vetting process that goes on within the Academy branches, and they look at the films and then they vote, and then, you know, here in December shortlist will come out where you will find out if you're one of the 10.
Right. No. And that's the thing. Since you're associated with Catherine, you probably will get there because she represents all our movies are like doing very well. She had 4 movies nominated for the Oscar. Nominated.
Oh, man.
They're like contenders. And the 5th one won, but
yeah.
That
was
secret?
Like a bummer, you know. but no, she aligns herself with people that are very talented, yes. So you're in good company, you know.
I hope. I've never worked with Catherine before. She actually once reached out to me, and actually on that film we got nominated for called Silent Nights. But then I already had a publicist here in L.A. Since, you know, the Academy is changing, becoming a more international Academy, and having Catherine working both in the U.S. and in London, out of London for the European market, it made sense to have somebody who had a crossover there. So, you know, it's a whole nother story and a whole nother talk about all that. But we're just hoping, and for me, it was about making the film.
Right.
It was about finding a new filmmaker that I hopefully would work with in the future,
right?
Which I definitely want to do. No matter what will happen with this film, we've been into festivals already, so we kind of made a plan and a path for that, and we have been succeeding in that. I wanted to be in. We went to Toronto. It premiered in Toronto, not the TIFF in September, but they have a queer a festival under TIFF in June called Inside Out, which is about the LGBTQ+ people and films about that.
Uh-huh.
And then we went on to a lot of those festivals. We've been in Seattle. We just won last week, actually, in Chicago.
Congratulations.
The Chicago International Children's Film Festival. We got 2 prizes. First prize by the children's jury, and which is the most important for me because it's a children's film festival, so it's youth and children's film festival. And then second prize on the professional jury.
Yeah.
So that was really nice. So that was really like, that is all good for me. You know, then I know that coming back to the producing part, being a producer, that's for me, then I know that when Marie-Louise pitched this story to me and I saw something in it, getting those kudos and getting to those festivals and eventually winning some of those festivals, you just know that you saw something right there.
Right.
And then and that's all good for me,
it
you know.
It confirms your decisions, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. And the Oscar and any other kudos you can get through your life and with this film would be fantastic. But we already succeeded in that so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to ask you, do you want to give a shout out to a couple of the stars of the film? What's the name of the boy?
The boy is called Cian Peake, and he is amazing. I mean, he's a natural. You know, he hasn't been trained in the acting, but he has a wish to become an actor, and I definitely think that after this film, he can succeed those dreams. But he is still only 15, so so there's I think himself and his family and everybody saying, well, you know, you can take it easy. You know, you need your education and you need that. So I'm not going to push him to drop any of that.
Right.
And then the mother is a very well-known actress out of Denmark called Ellen Hillingser, who's also a very good personal friend. And she stepped up when we didn't have any money and said, I want to do this because it's such an important case, such an important topic. And she plays very well the mother, and also being praised by and many of the reviews we've gotten so far in the films. Because, you know, the great thing about getting to festivals and all that, you get out there and you can begin to get reviews on your film. You know?
Right, yeah. Now, the movie is in Danish, right?
In Danish.
With subtitles.
Subtitles.
Now, does it make more sense to make films in English? Or, I mean, what is the reason? I mean, was it like a conscious decision to make it in Danish?
Yes, because, I mean, it's never really a discussion there because, you know, we are in Denmark and we are Danish filmmakers. And, you know, the stories are Danish. And if you want to become a filmmaker in Denmark, you need to do it in Danish because that's part of the governmental support schemes that you do that. You know, it doesn't say you cannot shoot in English. But doing her first film in English, for me, would just be, for me, a strange move because it would feel like you were doing it for something other than making a movie. And that's very important for me. I never do anything of these movies to have a, you know, back mind strategy of something. For me, it's about the filmmaker and it's about making a project. And if that project resonates best in Danish, then it's Danish. If it goes in American, if you have an American movie, or many American projects and things like that.
Right.
Or Swedish or Norwegian or whatever. Fantastic.
Right.
But yeah, of course, when you get into the feature business, it's much more about should we do this or should we do that? Because then it becomes a commercial valuation of the project.
Right.
Meaning that if you're sitting with a project that, you know, can't really raise the financing on a local language, you know, system. But if you turned it into English, you would suddenly have the world as your buying powers.
Right.
Then, of course, that's something to consider. But then that's also why that is the biggest difference between shorts and features is that features are commercial, you know, it's a commercial commodity that you have to deal with and you have to figure out how to finance it and you have to figure out how to sell it to make money on it.
Right.
The short films are there for me to work with the talent and see if I want to work with them again.
Right.
There's been people that I work with that I'm going to say, I'm never going to, you know, I'm never going to make a baby with them. I mean, you know, you know, I did my flirtation and a date, but that was it. It's not going to be a baby this time around, you know?
Sure.
So in that case, I really never in the short films think about if it's in what kind of language.
Yeah. Amazing.
You have to really, really love this industry. Yeah. You know, it's so important. I feel like a lot of people go into it. They just want that end result. They just want what's going to make them money or make them fame. But, you know, to really, really make it or to not even make it, but just be happy with what you're doing, you have to really, really love the craft for sure.
Yeah.
And on that note, Kim Magnussen, Danish filmmaker, of course, producer. So, and the film is Confirmation. Are we going to be able to see it anywhere?
Hopefully. I mean, hopefully, I mean, there have been some buyers of short films that has been looking into it, like I said, some of those streaming sites, but also there's this great program called Shorts. It's called Shorts TV, but it's also what they do. They take out, you know, they take out what you call it, short films, and put them into a package and travel around.
The country.
The country as a theatrical release thing.
Right.
So they're very interested in it, and so you know, so I definitely hope that the listener and the viewers on Facebook will be able to see this movie at one point.
That would be cool because we talked about it for an hour.
Yeah,
we'd
love to watch it. It sounds really, really
just
great.
We could just have showed it here and I could have shut up and nobody...
So, Kim, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that? Are you on social media?
Yes,
is the
I'm on social media and so is the film. It has their own, you know, social media pages. It's called hashtag The Confirmation Film.
Okay.
The Confirmation Film, or is on Facebook as The Confirmation Film, you know.
Yeah.
So and there you can see clips from the movie we are loading up, and a lot of you can also see the actors, and you can, you know, see, you know, both behind the scenes photos and in front of the camera photos, and you know,
amazing
reviews have we gotten from everywhere and things like that. So
I can't wait to hear more.
Go and visit and like and share, guys.
There you go. But I mean, that's what you gotta do.
Exactly. And on that note, I just want to say this: in November is Trans Awareness Month. So please consider and share everything you can for either our film or anything else that you know out there, because we all are diverse and we all need to accept each other and be who we are.
And we're also over time on the show.
It's
so
fantastic.
We're going to wrap it up. Kim, thank you
thank
so
you.
Much
thank
for joining
for
us.
Coming.
Thank you for having
really
me.
It was really great.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, Jen.
All right. You too.
See you all on Monday.
Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen only.